This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use the coupon code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax. To bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the Internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, Chris. It's been quite a week, but we're...
Boy, has it.
We're getting through things, and we are happy to report that we have a great show for everybody.
We do actually have a great show for everybody. Katie Schenkel is going to be here. You may know her from comicsalliance.com, but you also may know her as the writer of Moonlighters, a comic that I recommended on this very show just a couple weeks ago on account of it being super fun. We're going to be talking to her about werewolves, about Draculas, about all kinds of bits and bobs. So you don't want to miss that interview. Very light wrestling content this week, I would say, probably.
Okay. That's right, Chris. We're going to talk to Katie. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about werewolves and other cool stuff. But before we get to that, as always, there's business to take care of right here at the top of the show. Let's kick it off by thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the good, good souls who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they're kicking in as little as a dollar a month to genuinely help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And I gotta say, we've gotten before we get into thanking individual people, we've gotten a great groundswell of support in the past week, which is wonderful and phenomenal to see. I know that we are closer than we have ever been to the Snack Situation podcast. I am very excited about Patreon and about all of you out there. So, Matt, who do we have to thank?
Justin McNeil.
Thank you, Justin.
James Reed.
Thank you, James.
Nick Nadel.
Oh, thank you, Nick.
John Hex.
Ah, John Hex, longtime supporter of ours. Yep. Thank you, John.
Dan Spaceman.
Ah, the Spachemin back in the house. Thank you, Dan.
Alex Chung.
Thank you, Alex.
Ben Hale.
Thank you, Ben.
Christopher Monroe.
Hey, that's my name.
It sure is.
Thank you, Christopher.
Jeff Verwain.
Thank you, Jeff Verwain.
Scott Parrish.
Thank you, Scott.
And Emmanuel Hernandez.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Everybody, thanks so much for supporting the show, for supporting me and Matt. And look, we're not asking you to support us for nothing in return. We wouldn't do that. Not your pals, Chris and Matt. We've got bonus content. We've got ad-free episodes. Every week, Matt puts up an ad-free show, and you can just sync that right to your podcast app of choice like normal. We, like I said, we're so close to being able to launch an entirely new monthly show. Genuinely want to thank everybody for backing us up on that.
Yeah, and I think we've learned the lesson. If you want to really get some big success on your Patreon, just very publicly lose your job.
Yeah, like lose half your income, and people will maybe feel a little bad about it.
But for real and seriously, thank you everybody for helping us out and for your support on Patreon. It is very, very deeply appreciated.
Yeah.
And now, Chris, it's time for some checks and wrecks.
Oh, let's kick it. So come on.
Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Matt, before we started recording the show, I had not really prepared checks and recs, and I literally had to walk to the other room and ask Aiden if we had done anything this week. And the answer is no. Basically, my check is that I have been very hard at work for someone who lost his main job last week. I've been just writing up a storm. I knocked out several pages of actually Army of Darkness that Chad and I have been working on. Got a bunch of stuff knocked out for that. And I also kind of sat down and dealt with a couple of projects that maybe had just been waiting in the wings a little bit, and I hadn't had time to get them finished. So in case you were wondering, Dracula the Unconquered numbers 2 and 3 are on their way to Comixology Unlimited. Skater X number 2 is going to be available on Comixology Unlimited. And Skater X number 3 is going to be out on April 19th. So I've weirdly been very busy with work, as well as kind of hustling on some side gigs.
That's very exciting. I'm excited for more comics.
Yeah, I also I got my hair cut and I went to Target in the middle of the day.
Oh well, that's very similar to what Stone Cold HCC may or may not have done. Stay tuned for that. That's a little teaser for everybody.
Matt, what is your check this week? What have you been up to?
Well, as of the time this episode is going live, there will be about 4 days left on the Everything Will Be Okay Kickstarter. It ends Friday, April 14th at noon. That is the deadline, and it's going to be a nail biter, everybody. we will see how that turns out, whether it gets funded or not. But as part of trying to get a little more attention and some more eyes on that project, I've been doing what I would call like a little mini podcast tour over the past week or so. And so I just wanted to name drop some of the podcasts that I've been on. If you guys would like to go check out those podcast appearances, you are more than welcome to do so. I was on Kieran Sheehan's Zero Hour podcast, which is his podcast about comics origins. Chris, I know you've done that show.
Yeah, really, really fun show.
Really fun show. I talked with Kieran quite a bit about buying comics at grocery stores and Spider-Man, which you might suspect I would talk about a lot. And also, as a child, buying comics that I could not understand at all, but I read them repeatedly. I read them over and over again. So if you want to hear me talk more about that, you can go check out Zero Hour. I was on an episode of The Nerdy Show. We had some hosts from The Nerdy Show on very recently to talk about the Lightning Dogs project that they're doing. I was on an episode of their show where we talked about science fantasy as a genre, and we spent almost 40 minutes just trying to figure out what science fantasy is as a genre, since it's kind of a catch-all. I think it's a pretty interesting discussion, and that episode should be up maybe the same day as this episode of War Rocket Ajax comes out. I was on an episode of a podcast called Rank and Vile, which is hosted by a couple of War Rocket Ajax fans. It's a podcast that was inspired by Every Story Ever. But instead of ranking comic book stories, they rank horror movies. We watched 3 horror movies for the show. I claimed Phantasm so we could rank Phantasm.
Good call. Good call.
We ranked a movie called Chopping Mall, which is as 80s as anything could possibly be. And we also ranked the 1996 Stephen King adaptation Thinner, which is shockingly racist. So,
is it really?
Yeah, it involves a curse put on by a certain type of person who stereotypically administers curses. So we ranked all 3 of those movies, had a really fun conversation. Yeah, had a really fun conversation with those guys over at Rank and Vile. You can check that out. It's at, I think if you just search for Rank and Vile Cast, you can find that show. I also did an interview for a radio show in Toronto, Canada, that is an entirely comics-based radio show. I do not know if that will be available online in the immediate, but I think they have a SoundCloud page, so hopefully I can link to that SoundCloud version of that interview, where I just talked about webcomics and digital comics and different kinds of comics publishing.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
You didn't go back on your old buddy Man Cow show and not tell me, did you?
I did not go on Man Cow.
Okay.
I have, however, as of this recording, I haven't recorded it yet. But by tomorrow, I will have recorded with our good friend, L. Collins, an episode of the relaunched Induit podcast.
Oh, one of my favorites. One of my absolute favorites.
So you can keep an eye out for that, too. I've like I said, I've really been making those podcast rounds. If you want to go check out any of those, by the way, the radio show that I was on is called Radio Free Krypton. And I think it's pretty local to the Toronto, Canada area, but hopefully it'll be online eventually. All that is to promote the Everything Will Be Okay Kickstarter, which keep your fingers crossed, everybody. All right, let's make some recommendations, Chris. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week, have we talked about it? You'll have to refresh my memory. I'm a little hazy on the past couple weeks. Did we talk about Southpaw Regional Wrestling, Matt?
I don't think we've talked about it on the show, and here's our modicum of wrestling content, I suppose.
Yeah, this is Southpaw Regional Wrestling is amazing. It's, weirdly enough, it is literally just a marketing campaign for KFC, where KFC, like, got together with WWE, and they came up with, like they were like, hey, make some YouTube videos that'll probably go viral amongst wrestling fans, and we'll sponsor them. And I'm 100% sure that is exactly how that conversation happened. So take that with a grain of salt. But also, it is pro wrestlers clearly just fucking around the way they fuck around backstage. It is a series of YouTube videos that are purported to be the premise of the premise of the bit, Matt, is that they are, this is a lost tape from 1987 for an outlaw promotion called Southpaw Regional Wrestling. So it's kind of a parody of, like, local 80s indie wrestling. I know a couple of purists. I know one purist in particular who was very mad that this is just Vince Jr. Making fun of the hard workers that he put out of business. And I do think that good friend of mine may have worked himself into a shoot.
I mean, I would be lying if I didn't also have that thought pop into my head while I was watching Southpaw Regional Wrestling. But it is also very fun. And somebody made the point that if Vince was at all involved in the making of Southpaw Regional Wrestling, he would be in it.
Yes. No, I think this is literally... Well, because here's the thing. We know that Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson goof off backstage as Sex Ferguson and Chad Too Bad.
Yes.
So Tex Ferguson and Chad Too Bad being their Southpaw Regional Wrestling characters really just makes me feel like this is how they entertain themselves backstage. So everybody in the videos is a WWE wrestler, but they have taken on their Southpaw Regional Wrestling characters. So you have Chad Too Bad and Tex Ferguson. You've got Mr. McElroy the Banker, who is Tyler Breeze, doing like an old like 1980s like Million Dollar Man style gimmick. Maybe the funniest on like three different levels is Rusev and Lana as the All-American Farmers. It's funny on at least three levels. Not the least of which being that it's Rusev doing like a Southern accent. Rusev, who is shoot Bulgarian. It's very funny. It's absolutely worth watching. I think there's seven videos.
There are only four.
Only four?
Yeah.
They're about 5 minutes long. They go pretty quick, and they're really, really fun. And I will never love anything as much as John Cena loves Anchorman.
You're not kidding.
Man loves it, and I love that he does.
I'll say this about Southpaw Regional Wrestling. So much of WWE comedy does not succeed as comedy. This succeeds as comedy because it's about something that they are so familiar with that they can brilliantly send it up.
Oh, yeah. Like, because the thing about wrestling, and especially the, like, current generation of wrestlers, is that they're all fucking nerds. they're just fucking nerds for wrestling.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you know that, like, I got an email this week from WWE Network, and it was like, we've just added over 100 hours of new content, including Mid-South Wrestling. And you know that, like, none of the people that they want to be interested in the WWE Network give a shit about Mid-South Wrestling. That's all shit we want to watch. That's all shit the boys want to watch, you know? So it was really fun to see Southpaw Regional Wrestling. And I would highly recommend it. And that is, I believe, the end of our wrestling content.
Yeah, because my recommendation is not really a recommendation. It's not an anti-rec, because I don't know... I haven't really formulated an opinion on it yet, but I've listened to the first couple episodes, and it is interesting, if nothing else. It's the new podcast from Serial and This American Life, S-Town, which dropped all seven, I think it's only seven episodes, maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and it's a very well-constructed podcast. It's very well put together. It's beautifully edited. It's got good music. And it's got really interesting characters in it, but the journalist in me, the reporter in me, listened to the first episode and said, "What the fuck is this guy doing?" Like the host of the show, who's talking about basically getting a call from this guy in Alabama who hates the town where he lives, where he grew up, and thinks that a murder has been covered up. And he wants This American Life / NPR to investigate it. Basically, he is inviting a reporter to come to his town and investigate a murder based on something he overheard some teenagers talking about, which sets off every alarm and every red flag in my head, right? But that's not the story. The story is this guy. The story is the town. Like, obviously, he just wanted someone who might understand him to come to his town and hear his story. And when you look at it from that perspective, it makes a lot more sense. And Marlene has gotten a little further ahead of me in it. She told, like, we were talking about it today, and she was just kind of like, keep listening, it takes a turn. So I may come back and report later on, you know, where I fall on it. Because I'll say, like, as a reporter, it bugs me, and as a Southerner, it bugs me, because it presents, you know, not a great picture of the modern South in places. So I'm interested in it, and I will probably listen to the rest of it, but I don't know if I can recommend it yet. And if anybody listening has listened to the whole thing, I would love to know what you thought of it if you've listened to all of it. And it's really also interesting for a podcast to basically do the Netflix model of putting out all its episodes at the same time.
That is really interesting. But, like, at the same time, I'm like, it's got me thinking, like, why wouldn't you if you were doing like a narrative thing, you know?
Yeah, I
like,
mean, unless
if you got them all. Like, why not?
Unless it's like a narrative podcast where the audience is being invited to participate,
mm-hmm.
or you want to cover new developments, which is, I think, kind of what Serial did in places. Yeah, I mean, why not? Why not do them all at one time? So I think there are definitely interesting aspects of it. I'll just have to draw further judgments down the line. But I wanted to bring it up here in the Rex just to talk about it, because it is really interesting to me. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics.
Before we get into this week's comics, I do just want to toss out there that two episodes ago, a complaint that I made was that I'm always reading stuff for work, so I'm behind on a lot of current Marvel books. And I have done what a lot of people suggested. I took a little time this week. And started getting caught up. Matt, have you read Al Ewing's and Ultimates book where they're going to cure Galactus? I read the first two issues of that shit. It's awesome.
I haven't read that, but you're making me want to.
Oh, it was so good. Kenneth Rocafort did the art. Anyway, that's like 3 years old now. But man, They're like, yeah, we're going to solve the Galactus problem. Then they go out in space, and Galactus is like, all right, so you're here to kill me? Like, others have tried, and Black Panther and Blue Marvel are like, I don't know, we're not here to kill you. We're here to solve the Galactus problem. We're here to cure you. It's fucking rad, dude.
I mean, that's pretty good. So, speaking of rad comics, a new one that came out this week by our good friend, good comics boy, Kyle Starks.
Oh, love that comics boy.
With colors by Chris Schweitzer, who is also a good comics boy.
Who went to go live on a boat and came back looking like a cartoon strongman. I just want to throw that out there. It's a good look.
He's a real-life Popeye, Chris Schweitzer.
He really is. And I mean that in the most complimentary way possible.
Rock Candy Mountain is out now, issue one. Kind of, I went into this book with no expectations. I didn't really know what I was in for. I just knew it was going to be a Kyle Starks comic.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you get is a characterization of the devil that I have never seen in anything before.
Oh, that devil. That devil's good.
There's the devil is looking for our lead character, Jackson.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's just had it up to here. Aw, shucks, aw, nuts. I'm the devil. I love it. And then we meet Jackson. He's riding the rails. He's a classic Depression era hobo. But the depiction of hobos in this book is not just the stereotype. Like, being a hobo in this comic is clearly a life choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find out that the son of the owner of the railroads is also a hobo.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of justifiable sensitivity to cartoon and comics depictions of hobos as kind of like mocking the Great Depression, and especially now in a time when, you know, we've got a lot of, I mean, not to overuse the phrase, but there's a lot of economic anxiety. There's a lot of people who are having rough times of it, and that's legit. But I also feel like this comic is more in the vein of an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, in that it's not just a hobo comic. It's like an American Odyssey comic, you know? Yeah.
There are lots of different hobos of different types with different goals. It's a riff on a classic song, like an old folk song.
Yeah.
Big Rock Candy Mountain, which was a hobo song, real hobo folk song that then got adapted later into being a children's song. But there's actually an essay in the back of this first issue about what Big Rock Candy Mountain was originally all about and its origins and its being recorded and how the cigarette trees got changed into licorice trees.
Mm-hmm.
In other versions. And I find all that stuff really fascinating. It's not that this is just out of nowhere and it's not researched. But at the same time, you know, our sort of audience identification character, the non-hobo guy who gets on the train and gets kind of pulled into this world, does say that our hero, Jackson, has what is it, punch diarrhea and their faces are the bowls? The toilet bowls?
He's got punch diarrhea in the faces of the toilet bowls. Which is, like, look, I don't think that's as elegant as you brought a you to a me fight, but it might be the most Kyle Starksy thing that's ever been put to paper. I'll tell you that.
It would rank on our quote list, for sure. The word heavyweight champions.
Here's something else that this book has, Matt. I'm in it. If you look closely, it's hilarious. Look, full disclosure here, Kyle's a friend. Like, Kyle's a friend of mine. The two shitty cops, if you look at them, it's me and Chad.
They sure are. I didn't even really notice it, but you're 100% right.
Yep, it's me and Chad. And I think Kyle's been doing that. I think he's offered, I'm not quite sure what the details are, but I think he's offered to cast a few incidental characters with folks. And so I'm in it. As the worst.
It's really good. Yeah, if you haven't checked out Rock Candy Mountain number one, you absolutely should. Another Another first issue that came out this week that I also thought was really good, but is a little more, I don't know, what it's about is a little more obtuse. It's a little more unclear. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the appeal of it is Black Cloud number one. Story is by Ivan Brandon and Jason Latour. The script is just by Ivan Brandon. The art is by Greg Hinkle and colors by none other than my namesake, Matt Wilson, because I got pulled into some tweets where they were trying to talk about color in Matt, but instead they talked about Matt D. Wilson. But basically, this is kind of like a magical realism book. This is a book where it's somewhat left up to the reader to figure out that there's a lead character, a lady who, you know, might be considered, to put it in inelegant terms, a weirdo in modern society. But she is offering people glimpses into the world that she is actually from, which is this very fantastical dream world. And she happens upon this group of, you know, tie-clad, suit-wearing, fancy-dressed people and pulls one of them into the world, and he becomes totally intoxicated by it. He becomes totally fascinated with her. As it turns out, he's a very connected guy who in high society and in the world of politics, and things kind of kick off from there. But, like, nothing is spoon-fed to you as a reader. Like, we don't know nearly all of what's going on with the world that she is originally from. We don't know nearly about all of, you know, what exactly her deal is and what her status is in that other world, because clearly she seems to be pretty high status there. It's a first issue that does not answer every question, but in some ways I feel like that is the appeal of it. It's also got absolutely gorgeous art. There's a lot to recommend Black Cloud for. I think it's mega good. The third comic that I wanted to talk about is Kim Reaper number one from Oni Press, written and with art by Sarah Grayley, who you might know has a connection to Kyle Starks in that they both have done Rick and Morty comics for Oni Press. If I was going to favorably compare it to another comic, not that they share a ton necessarily, other than maybe tonal kinds of things, and that there's a romance angle to it, I would compare it somewhat to Jonesy, which came out from Boom not too long ago. They are both these very pretty lighthearted books about characters who are maybe kind of high school age, who have crushes and feelings for each other, and then they find out weird things. And the weird thing that gets found out in Kim Reaper is that the object of affection from the start of the book, Kim, has a part-time job as a Grim Reaper. And the lead character, or kind of the... She's not the title character, but she's pursuing Kim Reaper from a romantic standpoint. She ends up following Kim on a job, and things get really weird and wild after that. Like, lots of twists and turns you're not expecting that get increasingly funny and absurd as the issue goes on. It, you know, I've talked before, like, that I wish there was more humor in comic books. And between Kim Reaper and Rock Candy Mountain, I think humor in comic books has been well represented this week.
Yeah, it's a good week for it.
I would give big recommendations to all three of those comics we're talking about. They're all super fun, super good. And two of them are super funny. One is a pretty great fantastical mystery that I think you'll like as well. All right, Chris, that's going to do it for our comic segment. We're going to talk to Katie Schenkel here in just a minute, but before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Previously, I have asked you to explain to me what Loot Crate is. I'm feeling much better now. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad.
I think we maybe had to take a couple weeks off of Loot Crate because I was just feeling confused about a lot of things. Loot Crate among them. But I'm feeling better. So, Matt, let me see if I got this right.
Okay.
Loot Crate is a subscription service where you pay less than $20 a month, and then a person comes to your house and takes away all of your cool pop culture items.
Let me stop you there.
Did I not have that right?
You were doing really well up to a point.
Okay.
Okay, so it's not just any person, first of all, who comes to your house. It is a delivery person.
Okay.
And they're not taking things away. They're bringing things to you.
Oh, okay. I can really see where I biffed that one. Okay.
Yeah, they arrive at your home with a box full of 6 to 8 super cool exclusive items from all your favorite franchises. Like could be, you know, Batman stuff has been in boxes before. Lego stuff has been in boxes before. Stuff related to like RoboCop, stuff related to, you know, some of our favorite video games like Fallout. All that stuff has been in Loot Crate boxes in the past. There's going to be other cool stuff in Loot Crate boxes to come, and every Loot Crate is themed around a particular theme. What the stuff you're going to get in your box, there's 6 to 8 items, you know, they're all going to be based around a certain theme that's going to be super cool and that, you know, will be relevant to you and to your life.
What do they take?
They don't take anything.
Well, no, because it's like...
Aside from the money that you pay.
Uh-huh. Well, you pay for the service, right? But I assume that they were looting your home.
No. What you get is loot. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's had this all wrong. I'm sorry.
Nobody's taking anything from anybody.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good to know. I will freely admit it. You got me. I had this one a little bit wrong.
Well, Chris, I'm super happy to clear that up. If you would like someone to come to your home and give you 6 to 8 super cool exclusive items and not take anything away from you, go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Use the coupon code WarRocketAjax, and actually they'll take less from you than if you didn't use that code, $3 less, because you will get $3 off your new subscription if you use that URL and that offer code. I'm happy to have cleared things up for you.
Yeah, one day I'll get it right, Matt. It's hard.
Let's move on to something that I think is going to be easy and fun. Let's talk to Katie Schenkel.
That sounds like a real good time. Let's do that. Joining us for the program this week is someone that I'm very excited to talk about. She is a writer, a podcaster, a former Comics Alliance staffer. Her latest project is one that we have talked about on the show, and it's fantastic. It is called Moonlighters, out from Space Goat Productions. Katie Schenkel is here. Katie, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. Yeah, I realized over the weekend, I was like, oh, I'm going on right after the website that we both wrote at. That's going to be fun. But no, I'm doing good. It's just been a really weird full week since that happened. But yeah, I'm really excited. Actually, I'm really excited to be on the show. And just off the bat, thank you for talking about Moonlighters number one a few weeks ago. That was really cool.
See, that is a great segue into getting us talking about your book. Moonlighters, I really, really loved it. If anybody missed it, I reviewed it as part of our comics review segment on, I think, 2 weeks ago? It's been a weird... the timeline is a little weird for me right now. But yeah, it is a fantastic comic. Beautiful, super, like, fun art from Cal Murray. And it is a werewolf book, which is, oddly enough, not something I think you see as often as your Draculas, say, in comics.
Yeah, and it's also something where you don't see a lot of female werewolves, which is something that, years ago, I got to thinking about just in general, because, you know, whenever you have female monsters, they tend to be really sexy. And while you can certainly have, like, super, uber sexual, like, female werewolves, it's not something you get to see where they just get to be, like, werewolves who are female. And so, yeah, when I was approached to do the book, that was something that I really wanted to do, was make sure that there were a lot of female characters as the leads, specifically because, like, I mean, besides, like, Ginger Snaps, the Ginger Snap series, there haven't been, like, a ton of female werewolves in there. But, yeah, especially for comics, too. There aren't nearly as many as Dracula's, which seem to show up in, like, every superhero universe.
I mean, look, Dracula's are great. I don't think anybody is here to dispute that.
I guess we should say vampires, since, like, there are very few... Well, because...
I kind of meant specifically Dracula's, but go ahead.
Well, like, because it's a sub... Dracula's are a subset within the vampire.
Do you... This is... We're getting far afield from your book. But I am curious, like, do you find that it's weird that there is not a sort of blanket term like Dracula... based on a specific character, like for werewolves. Yeah.
I feel so bad. I've never actually seen, like, one of the werewolf movies, so I don't know what those characters are named. So, like, which makes me feel like such a, like, maybe I should have actually watched one of them before actually writing my book. So yeah, I think that maybe is part of it, is because Dracula is, like, the book was named Dracula, but the different werewolf movies never had the title character's name in it, and I think maybe that's part of the reason why. I can't think of any werewolf movie where the name of the main character was the actual, it's just the werewolf.
It's always, like, a generic term, like an American Werewolf in London, or just the Wolfman.
That's what I was thinking. I don't know why I was thinking, like, werewolf as the actual title of the classic horror. But yeah, maybe if I'd seen it all the way through. I wonder if that's maybe part of it. It's just the fact that Dracula gets the title of the book and movie and everything.
I mean, that's a solid guess, I think. What is Kate Beckinsale? Is she's a vampire, right? She's a Dracula. She's not a wolfman.
I think she's a Dracula. She's basically again another series I've not seen.
And the werewolves in Underworld are called lichens, not werewolves.
Lichens, which is the name of a moss, which is not particularly a threatening thing.
I don't know anything about that, but our mutual friend Ben Gully has seen every Underworld movie, so maybe we can get him to shine
it. Is it like Romeo and Juliet? Isn't it kind of like a warring factions, but then the two fall in love thing? That's what that's what I've gotten from the osmosis of just pop culture in the 2000s.
I think that's where it started, but I think now there have been 9 of them.
For the sake of continuing, let's just say, yeah, that's what it is. But I want to get into a little bit, if I can get into a little bit of, like, deep horror symbolism. because you talk about, you know, you talked about how there aren't a lot of girl or woman, female werewolves in fiction. And I do sort of wonder why that is, because the thing about all those monsters, you know, your Draculas, your Frankensteins, your creatures from Black Lagoons,
Abbots and Costellos,
sure, and your werewolves are all very thinly veiled symbols, like vampires, you know, have all that sexual symbolism mixed into them, and I feel like with werewolves it's always kind of the beastly nature of a human being, the beastly nature of man coming out sort of story, and I guess for some reason that just is not often applied to women characters.
I have an answer for that.
Okay.
Because again, I've thought about this, and I write about pop culture through a feminist veil. So I think it's directly connected to the reason why, like, even in post-apocalyptic movies, women's armpits are shaved, and it's that men don't like to think about women as, like, having actual bodies with, like, hair and that are kind of gross and are in pain, which is something that at least cis women go through a lot in terms of, which is funny because, again, it's like, it's a monster whose whole thing is dictated by the moon and is painful and is about like strong emotions. Yet think that that there'd be way more connections to, again, cis women, but to women's bodies. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just that it's way harder for there to be like weird, like sexual, like objectification of those monsters. Granted. Again, it's the internet. There's clearly also there's fans of that kind of, you know, stuff. But I think in terms of mainstream, you know, vampires can be like lady vampires can be sexy in a way that pertains to that. Which again is why, and again, I haven't seen it in a very long time, but when I watched the Gingersnap movies, which are about teenage girls who become werewolves, it does a better job of really touching into that in terms of the it not being a particularly fun kind of monster to be traditionally, because it's just about pain and about not having a lot of control over how your body feels. I think that's part of it, is that Hollywood execs going, we need a monster. We need a lady monster. Well, we're not going to do the one where she gets all hairy and her back breaks and, you know, she gets a snout.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about werewolves in those terms in the context of Moonlighters. Because Moonlighters is a really fun, like, cute werewolf story.
Yeah. I have thought about, that's the thing, I've thought about this. And we haven't, so in the story, for anybody who hasn't read it, which you should, because it's, I like it. I think I did good on the first issue. It starts off with a girl named Renee who gets bitten by a girl she's trying to help, who she thinks is just sick at a frat party, and it turns out that it was a werewolf and she gets bit. And we haven't seen Renee's transformation. There's been she mentions that she started to transform when she gets upset, but there's been no actual on screen yet. And there's a reason for that. That's going to show up in some issues, but yeah, the other werewolves in this are actually more like were-dogs, which a review did actually mention, like just for fans of werewolves, just so you know, there are some were-dogs in here, not necessarily were-wolves. So they have a lot less, their transformations are a lot less traditionally monstrous. But that was part of actually what was Space Goat, my publisher, actually brought up. They came from it where they wanted them to be kind of more dog-like, which I'm okay, because again, it's a kid's book. But there are going, I to hint at it, Renee's deal is a little different from the other werewolves of the story, and issue two is going to get into that more. So there is going to be some elements of the traditional monster horror stuff in there. In fact, in issue two, some of the notes I made to Cal were like, you know, it's going to get, like, some of the stuff around Renee is a little more spooky. I think JD, our editor, had described it as book three of Harry Potter in terms of, like, in terms of scary level. Like, okay, how creepy can we make some of these elements? And he was like, you know, that's for kids. Harry Potter, like, the first few Harry Potter books are for kids.
Sure, so, kill everybody off. It's for kids. That's what kids like.
I will say, there's far less murder in my book. But in terms of, like, creepy elements, there are some creepy elements to my story. Even with my large cast of werewolves that transform and have sparkly special effects to their transformations, which was not actually my script. That was Cal's choice that I wholeheartedly thumbs up for.
Well, this is something that you brought up, and it's something that I've talked about with you before. And I want to stress that this is not me. Like, I'm honestly not making fun of anyone when I ask this. I'm just fascinated by the idea of works that encounter unexpected audiences. But you did talk about running into the online werewolf community.
Yeah, the very first people to, after we had the announcement go out to different publications, Werewolf News, which was a website I was not aware of before doing this project, was the first one to break in. And they also reviewed it.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that werewolfnews.com? And if so, how did they get the best URL?
You're going to have to ask them. I believe it is werewolfnews.com. I will feel bad if that's, like, a completely different website. I mean, I assume, based off the URL, that even if it's not the correct website, it's in the same vein. But you'll have to ask them how they got that. But I want to be clear again, because, you know, it's not a community that I'm a part of, so I want to be very careful how I talk about it. And they've been very supportive. They have not only did a review of the first issue, but they've tweeted about it too. So I've been really pleased by not only that, and to be quite frank, to a lot of furry readers, they've been, because again, I have a very, Cal's designs are very cartoonish and it's very in that position. So, yeah, I've been very careful not to dive in too much to those communities, because essentially I just don't. I know that from being in different fandoms, even if it's not a specific, it's not like I'm a DC writer and jumping into a DC, like a deep DC fandom, but I'm still writing about something that they care about. So I'm very careful not to go too deep into those websites just because it's almost not my place as someone who's just writing to their taste. It's one of those things where I'm just really happy that people are enjoying the book. And it's cool to me that I'm touching on topics that they like and the sort of characters that they like, especially the fact that my cast is queer and they're also all characters of color. So I'm hoping that people from those communities that also interlap with those groups might be able to see themselves in a way that they wouldn't have seen from other stories about werewolves, honestly. That's something that I saw being talked about just with genre books and stories in general is just, yeah, that's great, but you either don't have any LGBT characters at all, or the ones you do have are just there to kind of boost up the straight characters, same thing with characters of color. You know, it's all, like, so many, like, genre stories are, like, vampire and urban supernatural stories are about white people. For all of that, I've been just very careful. Going back to the werewolf fandom thing. But yeah, I've just been careful to let them have their own community and hopefully enjoy my story. But I find it, like I said, I'm just glad that there's already a built-in community that's looking for good werewolf stories, and I hope that they like it.
Well, with the awareness that that community is out there, has that led you to any hesitation or rethinking of the story that you had already put together? Have you ever been sitting down, you know, to write a script or looking over your outline and thought, is Werewolf News going to like this?
I mean, so far they haven't had too many objections. Like I said, it was interesting that I think it was the Werewolf News. I think their review might have been the one that mentions the weredog thing. I know that a few of them, because the it's a digital first series, and while it technically is 20 pages on Comixology, really they're like split up, so it's only like I only get 10 full pages per issue. So I only have so much time to kind of set up number one. And I know that a few of the reviews said, like, well, yeah, it was, you know, it felt like it was concise and they Shankle used her space well, but it didn't, you know, there's a lot of questions that they had about the world. And I was already going to do a good amount of exposition for issue two, just because I knew that was the time that needed to happen. Nothing in the plot's changed. Actually, pretty much everything from my original pitch is going to plan. But I did think with the exposition, like, okay, I'm going to have to be really careful how I explain this and still do it in a way where I'm not doing just gigantic blocks of text. I'm not going Claremont on issue two. So trying to use my exposition effectively, but also get around to saying exactly what I want the readers to know now that I've already set up the main characters and the basic of situation.
You mention Claremont, and one of the reasons I asked is because writing an X-Men comic, I wrote the X-Men. I'm getting that into my interview with you, just so everybody knows. No, but like, I thought I knew. Like, I thought I understood. I thought I like Jubilee. I know what it's like to like Jubilee. And I didn't. And then I found out. I found out what it's like to really be into Fabian Cortez or Polaris. And I had this real temptation to, like, because, you know, when people are talking about the book, like, you and I both come from critical backgrounds, Matt as well. And I feel like there's the temptation to just do the thing that creators never do, which is just be like, yeah, hit me up if you got questions. I'm here. But I don't ever feel like that's a good thing to do as a creator. And I feel like partially because, you know, when you're dealing with something like the X-Men, that's something that's big. But, like, with a creator-owned book, like, if someone had any questions about Dracula the Unconquered, like, I would write them a letter. Like, I would call them on the phone, and I would be more than willing to talk about stuff that, you know, I created, because I think about, like, you know, you live with that stuff all the time in your head. And I'm really, like, is that temptation there for you? Like, I know you said you haven't really engaged with a lot of the fans on it, but like, is the temptation there to just be like, hey, hit me up if you got questions, I'll tell you exactly how the world works?
I did have I forget if it was before Comics Alliance went down or not. I had a moment fairly recently where I think I was, no, you know what, I was in a good mood, so it would have been before, but where, yeah, I think I was just having like a good night. I might have had like a hard cider. I'm such a lightweight. I literally was just like, yeah, I'm just chilling. And I almost did the like, hey, ask me any question. And either I didn't do it or I did and no one asked me any questions on Twitter. I mean, my thing is that I will say, just to clarify, this isn't actually because I came in, Space Ghost had already had the concept, so technically this isn't actually a creator-owned comic. But it is, it's still an original, it's, you know, I'm not basing it off of anything else. So a lot of the world building was stuff that I kind of built into what their line work for the series already was. So yeah, it is one of those things where, especially now, now that one issue is out, but I know all the things that are going to happen later, it is really tempting to, or like to hint at stuff and, but yeah, to have people ask questions, and maybe I'll get more into that, later down the line. Cause I can always just say, oh yeah, I can't tell you yet and be a big jerk on Twitter. Be like, oh, sorry, spoilers, can't tell you. But yeah,
listen, if that was the only kind of jerk there was to be on Twitter, then this world would be a magical and beautiful place.
I know. I'm also like, so, but I get where you're coming from too, because, and I do not really want to get into the details of this, but in my past life, I have written fan fiction before, and I was on Tumblr and writing fan fiction fairly regularly, not too long ago, a few years ago. But, and on that, yeah, there were times when I'd be like, yeah, ask me, like, go into my messages and ask me questions about it, and I'll talk about my stuff, or, you know, give me one of my stories and I'll tell you my favorite section of it. It's one of those things where once more the story gets out there, I am totally okay with when I actually tweet out, hey, does anybody have questions about it, actually doing like a quick Q&A thing. Mostly because I just want to make I really like people to see people be happy about the stuff I write. So, and especially with this, where it's, I'm getting to throw in Moonlighters, a lot of the stuff I've wanted to see, which is such a cliche thing, like, oh yeah, I wrote the story I wanted to read, but there is a lot of things in terms of tropes I want to avoid and elements that, that tickled me. As someone who can't wait to see Cal draw them for me, yeah, I'm more excited going forward to see readers get excited as the story goes. I don't mind a little bit of interaction with readers online. A little.
Yeah, there's a magic amount. And yeah. when we figure out what it is, we'll tell everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
In addition to Moonlighters, there's a couple other things we wanted to talk about. I know you've got a book called Cardboard Kingdom that's going to be coming out. I think you said almost a year to the day from right now.
So I don't know the actual day. I was told spring 2018, and since it is spring, it's going to be produced. It's going to be published by Knopf. I think their children's line, which is still incredible to me because that's like a... It's not that comic publishers aren't legitimate publishers, but like, Knopf put out Mouse. Like, Knopf put out, like, really prestigious books, and when I found out that they were interested in buying the rights, I had a little excited panic attack. Because like traditional publishing, it takes so long. Yeah, we found out nearly a year ago, and it's going to be another year until it's out in the world.
And that one is, I believe, it's a sort of a fantasy style book, sort of.
It's drawn by Chad Sell, and it's written by me, Chad, and then like 10 other people, which we can get into that if you'd like, the whole process behind how this thing got made. But it is about a group of kids in a neighborhood, and it's during summer, and they make cardboard costumes and have little adventures. So some of it is set in their imaginations, some of it is set in the real world. It switches back and forth from that point of view. But it's about their adventures in the neighborhood, it's about the characters that they kind of create for themselves, and it's about the obstacles they face. So there's a lot of stuff about gender identity. The very first chapter is actually, it starts off really with a bang in terms of that. Some of it is about different family dynamics. My characters, I don't want to give too much away, but some of it is about her coming with her personality, like coming to terms with finding confidence in herself, and a lot of it's about friendship. That's actually something I really like about it. And the cool thing is that while we had multiple writers, and each writer took one or two different chapters and kind of and put their character as the central character of each of their own chapter, all the characters interact with each other. So we were really good about kind of borrowing each other's characters for different scenes, and because they're all friends and they're all live in the same area, there's a lot of overlap of these kids having adventures.
That idea is really cool to me. Like the idea of you taking, like having someone else's character in your story interact. Do you run it by the other person? Like when someone wanted to use yours, were they like, "Hey, is this cool?" And you had to give them like little tips and tricks.
Chad had this idea primarily because he had written this short called The Sorceress Next Door, which is, it was online. I think his site got, there's something messy with Chad's personal site. And so when I looked it, cause I was going to send it to you before the interview and it wasn't up, but it's essentially about a little boy who creates this character named the Sorceress. And it's about him finding confidence to portray this like feminine character because it's something that he loves. So he decided to basically take those characters and then just expand on that neighborhood, but he didn't want to be the only person writing this book. So he put out a call online, which was like, "Hey, this is the basic premise. This is kind of my art style. Tell me what kind of characters you'd want to, like, tell me the character and what their story would be." And I think I came up with my concept literally within like 30 minutes. I think I submitted it within like an hour of finding out about the project just because I had this really specific idea. And then shocked, he contacted me. He was like, "Yeah, tell me more. Let's try to develop this." And then I think like a month later, he told me, "Yeah, I want you to be part of the project." And then we just worked on it for like, maybe 8 months before we ended up submitting it to different places. So once he had all these people he decided to pick for the project, and they each had characters and kind of a vague understanding of the kind of side characters there would be for it. And then he was the one who kind of organized each of the characters' chapters would be. And he then said, "Okay, this character has already been introduced in the story." So, and mine was actually fairly early. My character shows up in chapter 3. So he had said, "Okay, Katie, the chapter right before this has these two characters that were introduced. So if you can use them as kind of the main, and we can have some other characters in the background that were introduced in the first chapter, but this is who you can kind of work with." And we kind of each then wrote our chapters one after the other so that we each could read the chapter before and get a sense of who the characters were. I am shocked even now how well this worked out, because I went into it going, this is a lot of people. This is a lot of people working on the same thing. These are a lot of opinions and mindsets. Like, this could be a disaster. There could be like a jerk in the group that doesn't want to play fair. It is amazing to me how well this has worked. some of it is because Chad was really good at organizing everyone and getting everyone to figuring out how everybody would work. And we had, I think we had a couple people who just, who dropped out for time restraint, because of time constraints, and they couldn't be part of the project. But by and large, everybody worked really well together. As far as playing with each other's characters, it was one of those things where we, where when I worked on someone else that, or took, borrowed from the person before me, after I was done writing it, I had sent it over, we sent it over to him and just said, like, hey, is there anything that you would change dialogue-wise? And they're like, no, that looks good. Honestly, my character is very exuberant and has a big personality. So I, not that there aren't nuances to her, but I think it was really easy for people to find that voice. I've seen what it will be more or less the full book. Our editors and Knopf still have to go over things, but it's a really pretty book. I'm super excited for it to be out in the world.
Well, that is very exciting. I can't wait to have you back in a year to talk about that.
Yeah.
And look, maybe before then, too. Maybe before then. For now, though, it is time for us to stop asking you questions, and it's time for us to shift over to our friends on Twitter.com so that they can ask you questions. And Matt, if people want to get in on these little chats we have with our friends each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
You feel the icy bite of the lycanthrope. You join the Brotherhood of the Wolf. Now, or Sisterhood of the Wolf.
This seems way overcomplicated for asking me questions.
It's a process.
The moon grows full. You head out into the night, not knowing what you're doing or what terror you wreak. Morning finally dawns. What have you done? What have you wrought? You don't know, but you do sign up for an account on Twitter.com. You follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris, and wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. The moon isn't full. So you have your wits about you, and you ask questions, just like the questions you're about to hear for our guest, Katie Schenkel. Starting with this question from Discord Inc., Discord underscore Inc. on Twitter, James Fletcher, who wants to know, what's your favorite monster hunter or group of monster hunters?
Okay, so I was just talking about this today. I wouldn't say favorite, but it's one that I've seen. I watched the show very recently. It's on Netflix. It's called Crazy Head. It's a BBC show, and it's kind of like Supernatural if it was with two women, one of which is a plus-size black woman. But it's about two British women who hunt demons in London, and it's real fun. I feel bad because it's kind of a cheat because, again, I wouldn't say it's necessarily like my favorite, but it's one that I've seen fairly recently, and it was a pretty good treat to watch. And like I said, it's streaming on Netflix.
That sounds really good. I'll have to check that out.
It is short because it's a BBC show.
Up next, we have a question from our good friend, L. Collins, at another L on Twitter, who wants to know, if each of the three of you were a were creature, what kind of animal would you turn into? And L says that we could choose to answer for each other if we wanted.
Okay. Matt is a were hedgehog.
All right, I'll take it.
But he's like a cool hedgehog. He's like Sonic's best friend.
I was gonna say, so he's not. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have one for me? It's okay if you don't.
I don't think I've got one for you, Katie. I think, do you have an animal that I could turn into is maybe the most dangerous question any guest has ever asked us.
Well, I wanted to put it on you. Elle was the one who suggested.
That is true.
So as you know, there is a were corgi in my book. And
yes.
And it has occurred to me, there's a bit coming up in chapter 3, or in issue 3, which again, I'm just trying to tease so that people buy the book, where there's a really cute thing that happens in chapter 3 involving Felipe, who is the were-corgi. And I'm hoping that people do find it cute, because the whole reason I put that in is because the way that I relate to Felipe is that we're both basically Hufflepuffs, in that we like for people to be happy, and we like for things to be nice. And if I had the power to turn into a were-corgi, it's to make people feel better, because corgis are adorable. Like, that's why you send so many corgi gifs when people are feeling bad. So if I had the power to turn into a corgi, I would do it so that I could make people smile. And so I think that's the best answer I can give, is that I would be a were-corgi.
Matt, did you have one for me?
I don't know why this is what popped into my head.
I don't like that introduction.
But Chris, I think you would be a werehorse.
What?
Like, yeah. A majestic one, right?
Yeah, like a majestic.
I'm trying
to help here.
Like a
majestic.
I am so upset right now.
By a horse?
Why would I be a horse?
Chris, because you carry me. Because you carry me on your back.
Okay, that's fine. That is true. got a sore neck for carrying this show for 7 years. I'm kidding, Matt. You do literally all of the work.
This question is from Seth_Bingo on Twitter, who wants to know, what are the best jobs available for werewolves, and do they get benefits?
Oh yeah, I didn't mention the fact that they do odd jobs. Okay, so my comic, the whole gimmick of the comic is that these werewolves are college students. We didn't even mention they're college students. All right, this is on my bad, because I got sidetracked by talking about vampires. Bad me. So they're college students who, for odd jobs, because they need to pay their rent and the utilities and, like, for food and books, they do odd jobs for the magical community around them. And the whole joke is that, like, they do really, they're werewolves, but mostly what they do is, like, lawn care and finding lost pets and stuff like that. So my right answer is doing exactly what the Moonlighters are doing, and doing lawn care and finding lost pets for people in the magical community. So, that's what I'm going with. That's exactly what they should be doing, how they should be putting their time. What do you guys have? Do you guys have a good answer?
I mean, I think the traditional comics answer would be Private Eye, but you've already kind of got that covered.
A little bit. They're slowly, my characters are slowly easing into the detective. I feel like Felipe is eventually going to be like, no, we all need Sherlock Holmes hats. What are you guys talking about? We need to really lean into this detective thing. Felipe's very into costumes.
I think if you had some kind of sheep infestation on your property, they could take care of that. Next up, we have a question from @Leesk on Twitter.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. He says...
half of these people so far are Comics Alliance people.
The Comics Alliance diaspora.
Yeah.
James, who I recapped Legends of Tomorrow with... he says, hi, Katie and Chris and Matt. What is your favorite comfort food?
Of course this is his question. This is like half of the things that we talk about every day. you guys go first. I'll think of something.
Just like bread. I like bread. I do like bread. I don't know, Aiden, when we all got laid off last week, Aiden made me a skillet cookie, which is nice. But I wouldn't necessarily call that a comfort food as much as I would call that just like what I like to have on my birthday.
Sure. You like to be comforted on your birthday, I'm sure.
I make bad food choices when I need comfort. I will tell you that for free.
I mean, mine, If it isn't patently obvious from every other episode of War Rocket Ajax, mine is fried chicken. I will eat fried chicken anytime, and it makes me feel good.
So I'm going to go with, because here's the thing. My mom's a really good cook, so there are like several things that went through my brain. But she makes a really, really good chicken soup, and I've been able to replicate it, which means that when I actually do want to be comforted in a city where she isn't, which is where, we're not in the same state anymore, that's usually a pretty easy go-to. It just takes a few hours, but then it's comfort that lasts for days because we make so much soup with it.
Soup. Comics. The comfort that lasts for days.
Yeah. If you put enough water in it, it lasts for days.
While we're on this Comics Alliance, former Comics Alliance folks trend, this one comes from Charlotte of Oz, who says, the gang is very upbeat and joyful, but are there any monsters that make them go, Jesus, these assholes?
There will be.
Very coy.
There's something coming. Maybe I've hinted at it already. Not in the podcast, but maybe I've hinted at it in the series, maybe. So that's all I'll say about that.
All right. Very mysterious. Up next we have a question from Emma Lawson, also formerly of Comics Alliance.
Literally everyone listening tonight.
Who has a question that I think I know the answer to, but she asks, werewolves or vampires?
I mean, I kind of got to go with werewolves because they're a part of my brand now. So that's a thing that's happened in my life recently. Vampires are fine. Nothing against vampire aficionados, but I like the werewolves I'm writing at the very least.
Hashtag werewolf brand.
Werewolf brand.
I think that's I think we got an episode title, Matt.
Yep. And then finally, this is from Stone Cold HCC, an account that solely exists to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax.
Oh.
Not, as far as we know, a Comics Alliance contributor?
No, not as far as we know.
Unless it's Misk again, and he's just going to ask a food question.
Well, this is not about food. Oh. It's a true or false question. True or false, I'm in a Target parking lot right now.
I'm going to say true.
This is hard. This is hard because, it's either they're on mobile or they're lying. So I'm gonna go the Price is Right direction of doing the opposite. I'm gonna go false.
Matt, does it say sent by Twitter for iPhone or sent by Twitter for Android or Twitter for web? Can we actually detect this right now? Can we actually world detect this shit?
You have hacking skills, right? As a podcaster?
There's no indication. I will read Stone Cold HCC's tweet from March 31st, though, which is, every time Comics Alliance gets shut down, I feel even worse than when Matt doesn't read one of my tweets. So Stone Cold
HCC...
Not
passive-aggressive at all.
That's right.
Look, it's so weird that it's an every time this happens thing now.
I read them often, but sometimes we can't get to them every time, Stone Cold HCC, and I apologize. Our guest has been Katie Schenkel, and Katie, before we let you go, please let everybody know where they can find you online if they wish to find you and if you wish to be found.
God, so many places. Less places than last week. No, seriously, because normally I'd be like, well, you can find me at Comics a lot. I do all these things that come up. Not anymore.
I went and had to update the old Tumblr bio today, so.
It's a good thing that I ran out of space on my Twitter profile, because it doesn't say, writes at, it just has, Comics Alliance in there, and now I'm like, oh good, I don't have to change a damn thing, because it's not specific enough, so it works.
What a blessing.
What a blessing. So I'm at just plain tweets. I tweet prolifically. too much, perhaps? No, it's fine. You can, I also do a podcast and a web series with my boyfriend at justplainsomething.com. KatieSchenkel.com is based on my professional one, but you, yeah. And I do have a Patreon. I'm telling you, I have so many places. Patreon.com/justplainsomething. You can get Moonlighters on Comixology. It's digital first, and then it'll be published for print after the first arc is done.
All right. Our guest has been Katie Schenkel. Absolutely check out Moonlighters. It is adorable and fantastic. And why not check out Katie's Patreon as well? Katie, you've been a absolute joy to have as a guest. Thank you so much.
I have a free code for a copy of Moonlighters number one, and I think you're gonna put that in the show notes.
Yes, and that is a first come first serve kind of deal, correct?
Yes, and let me, and I'm assuming you guys know as well, if you pick it up.
Yeah, please tweet at us and let us know.
And it'll be specifically for Comixology.
So head to warrocketajax.com and check out that in the show notes, and get yourself a copy of Moonlighters if you haven't tried it out already. If you have tried it out already, I guess leave this one alone.
Also, maybe pre-order issue 2 or subscribe to the series. That would be also good.
Yeah. All right, Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks once again to Katie Schenkel. Definitely check her stuff out, because it is all fantastic.
Now, Chris, is the time that we answer a question from one of our fantastic listeners. This question is on Tumblr. It's actually the most recent question we've been asked, and I thought it might generate some good discuss.
Ooh, I love a little good discuss, I gotta say.
This is from Spider-Man Obsession on Twitter, who says, I was reading an issue of Spider-Man from the 2000s the other day, and there was a bit where the artist recreated a page from Amazing Spider-Man number 1 that recaps Spidey's origin story. This got me wondering, what do you think is the most frequently recreated, redone, or covered page in comics?
Yeah, I saw this, and I was really thinking about it. I thought it would be fun to talk about, too, so I'm glad you asked. Pages are a lot harder to do, like, a cover version of than like, just a cover, you know?
Yeah.
Because if it was covers, I mean,
I could,
you know,
I could easily answer what is the most recreated, redone, or covered cover in comics. I bet it's a tie for me. It's either the cover to Amazing Fantasy 15 with Spider-Man swinging across the page, or it's the Spider-Man No More cover with the Spider-Man costume in the trash can.
I think those are both solid bets. I think Superman number 1 and the Given to Matthias McGuire Justice League number 1 would probably give them both a run for their money.
Yeah, those have both been done a lot too. You're right.
But as far as like interior pages, that's a whole different animal. And I'm really not sure. Like my first thought is to be like, you know, yes, Father, I shall become a bat, but like, that's not really like the same page. Like if you're doing a version of that from Batman Year One, it's not really a cover of the panel that happens in Year One, you know, in Batman 404.
I do think that I've seen, at the very least, variations on that page or that scene multiple times.
Yeah.
The issue is that a lot of times when stuff like that gets retold, it is restaged also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like, you know, when Morrison redid Yes, Father, I Shall Become a Bat, he did it so that they had followed around the bat for a while first, right? And when it happened in Zero Year, it was trippier.
Matt, are you talking about Barbatos over there?
I'm talking about Barbatos.
Talk about the hype right after?
That is what I'm talking about.
Oh, this shit's so good.
A lot of times it's not the same layout as it was the first time around.
Yeah.
So as far as like pages that get homaged or, you know, redone with the same layout, like you said, I think it's a lot harder to not only to for those to get done, but for you to notice it as a reader than a cover.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real tough one for me to figure out. Like, I mean, I want to say it's probably something X-Men, because of how self-referential, like, X-Men in general, and, like, Claremont in particular, and then Claremont, you know, being so influential as a writer, like, it's probably one of those.
Well, certainly the You Had Your Chance, Now It's My Turn panel has been redone multiple times with characters other than Wolverine.
Yeah, like I think that one would be like a solid contender, if nothing else.
Or I'm sorry, it's You Took Your Best Shot, Now It's My Turn. Yeah. But I know that pose and that line has been referenced in homage multiple times. It's not the full page, but it's that one panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't know. I find this to be a very interesting subject. So if anybody out there has any suggestions, like, feel free to let us know. Like, get in touch, because I think it's a really interesting thing that you don't often think about as artists covering interiors as opposed to covers, like cover homages.
I don't know why this just popped into my head, but I'll say that one of the images that I feel like I've seen a whole bunch of times in comics, and again, this is just a panel, not a page, mm-hmm. but the image of Bruce Banner with the nuclear explosion happening behind him, and he's kind of got the one arm bent and the one arm out, and he's leaning over to a side, and he's screaming. Mm-hmm. Like that Hulk origin image, I've seen recreated several different times. But a lot of times they'll like add like an image of the Hulk behind him. But that's like the shorthand way of presenting the Hulk's origin.
Yeah.
So that might be a contender. Yeah, I would love to hear other people's ideas of what contenders for that would be are.
Yeah, please get in touch, because that's, like, again, it's something I had never really thought about, because interior pages are such a different animal. But yeah. But please get in touch with that.
All right, and thank you so much for that question, Spider-Man Obsession. I think that gives us a lot to chew on, and it might lead to something we can talk more about in a future episode. If you would like to send us a question, you can do so on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send questions to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send Every Story Ever lists, panel president lists, if you just have a listener comment you want to send, or if you want to sponsor the show, you can do all that there. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It is also where the panel president and Every Story Ever lists reside. Check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more positive reviews we have on iTunes, the more we are featured there, which is great for us and for you, the listener, because it builds our community. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you will find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
They can head over to the-isb.com, which is a fun little homepage for me. And hey, if you really want to help out and find some of my stuff, it would be super sweet if you were to pre-order Deadpool Bad Blood at your local comic shop. If you do not have a local comic shop, then check it out on Amazon. It is up for pre-order there. Also, Army of Darkness, or should I say Ash versus Army of Darkness, will be coming in June. And Sword Quest starts in May. We're doing some interviews on Sword Quest. And if you're out there and you have a podcast or you write for a comic site and you would like to talk to me and Chad about Sword Quest, get in touch. If you want to talk to us about Army of Darkness, get in touch. We'll talk your ear off. It's fun stuff to talk about. Head over to the-isb.com if you would like to find my columns, my comics, my podcasts, or just find me.
And Chris, that is pretty much going to wrap us up. Would you like to send people over to an organization that they can donate to here at the end of the show?
Yeah. Obviously, we've been hearing a lot about Syria lately. I know there's a lot of good organizations doing good work over there right now, especially. But I think the one that is kind of easiest to support and sort of easiest to vet and find to be legitimate is Doctors Without Borders. You can find them on Twitter under @MSF, and you can go, because it's French, it's Médecins Sans Frontières, and you can find their website where you can donate at doctorswithoutborders.org. That would be a great place for you to go and chip in some money for relief efforts, for all the good stuff that they do. Because it's scary times out there right now, but they are on the front lines helping out in a very basic and very effective way of delivering medicine and medical aid to maybe people who would not otherwise be getting it due to various circumstances. But yes, that's the one I've got this week. DoctorsWithoutBorders.org. Or you can find them at MSF on Twitter.
Yes, very worthy cause. That's going to do it for this episode of War Rocket Ajax. Chris, yet again, some HQC.
Oh, did we S-rank it once again?
S-rank HQC.
Beautiful. Beautiful. We'll be back next week, everybody. We'll have a great show. We've got some killer guests lined up for the next little bit, so stay with us, and we'll keep delivering. And hey, if you've got any bonus content ideas that you're kind of jonesing to see, I can't make any promises, but we would love to hear what you would love to hear. So get in touch.
We love you.
Yeah! Flash.